Welcome to the 22nd episode of the 1796 Podcast, a podcast that features exclusive interviews and in-depth news about the Tennessee National Guard and the Tennessee Military Department. I'm Captain Hall.
And I'm Master Sergeant Ham,
your co-host of the 1796 Podcast. On this episode, Master Sergeant Ham sits down with Brigadier General Todd Wiles, Chief of Staff of the Tennessee Air National Guard. And later, he interviews Brigadier General Warner Ross, the Adjutant General of the Tennessee National Guard, to discuss his experiences since taking the role as Adjutant General. And of course, we'll brief you on the latest and most important news impacting the Tennessee National Guard in our Tennessee Bluff news segment. But first, our interview with Brigadier General Todd Wiles.
Okay, we are excited today. Our first time interview with Brigadier General Todd Wiles, who is the Chief of Staff of the Air National Guard in the state of Tennessee. General Wiles, welcome to the 1796 Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Sergeant Ham. Glad to be here. It's an honor.
Excellent. We usually start every interview the same way. We'd like to know kind of how you got here. So tell us your story. What brought you to where you are?
Sure. Well, I honestly have to thank our Lord for getting me to where I am. I'm certainly in a position where I never envisioned I would be. I'm just thankful that He's allowed timing, luck, great leadership to have been in place to mentor me and to get me to where I am today as Chief of Staff here at Tennessee Air National Guard. Growing up as a child, I always wanted to fly. I wanted to serve my country. So those two things. So I had the lifelong childhood dream of being a fighter pilot for the United States of America, and just very thankful that I was able to do that. So I did a 4-year Air Force ROTC through Western, but we were down here at Tennessee State University. It was where DET 790, the ROTC detachment, still is today. But we were down here about twice a week and commissioned in June or May of 1995 into active duty Air Force. Shipped off to pilot training at Shepherd Air Force Base in Wichita Falls, Texas. Started active duty Air Force flight training as a new second lieutenant. Leaving Shepherd, I was fortunate enough to get an F-16 out of pilot training. But then go to my first ops squadron, which was Cannon Air Force Base. Back then was F-16 only. So I did Cannon Air Force Base in New Mexico for about 3.5 years there. And then volunteered to go to Korea. Kunsan Air Base was where I got assigned. My squadron commander had been a former F-111 pilot, and then from Vietnam, and then A F-4 driver was my last squadron commander there at Cannon, and who used to smoke in the jet, by the way. But he said every real fighter pilot goes to Korea. So I volunteered for Kunsan, Korea, and went off on that 1-year remote tour to Kunsan Air Base, Korea. At the end of my Kunsan tour, my operations group commander there took five of six of us that were up for assignment, and he said the Air Force is short on ALOs, which is air liaison officers, and he said it'll be career broadening. I didn't even know what an ALO was at the time, but I was one of the five that received that ALO assignment. So that ALO assignment basically was the officer in charge of the TACP that does air support for the Army. At the time, I was not excited about that job, but looking back after what I went through with the Army and ended up going to OIF-1 on the ground with the Army doing air support, it was probably the most formational and most influential assignment that I had that would affect my career later. And at that time, I knew very little about the Army and what I was getting into. That initial assignment, I showed up at Fort Stewart as a wet behind the ears young Air Force captain, had only flown fighters, and were my eyes about to be open. So I got thrust into the 3rd Infantry Division Army leadership level, which for me, having just coming out of fighter squadrons only, was a maturity and a leadership, just a big jump for me. And but I look back and I think about what a great assignment that turned into. You know, as I was about 6 months into that assignment there in Savannah, Georgia, you know, I was on the range at Fort Drum doing my TAC air control qualification checkout the morning of 9/11. So that job, which you know, we thought was just going to be exercises only there at Fort Stewart there in Savannah, you know, nice assignment, that that changed very rapidly, obviously, from that day forward. So
right.
Fast forward, you know, that we end up the whole third ID mobilized. Our brigade, 2nd Brigade, went to Kuwait first, and then the rest of the division joins us that fall. And then, you know, we stay there. And then by spring of 03, we invaded Iraq with 3rd Infantry Division, you know, west of the Euphrates and the Tigris, and 1st Marine Division, 1st MARDIV, east of the Tigris Euphrates, and we push northward out of that. So spent a little bit more time on that because there was some pretty amazing individuals I served with and experiences that I normally would not have gotten just staying in a aircraft only track. We were young and inexperienced, but we leaned on each other as a team to get through ground combat. And I got to thank the Army. You know, the Army took care of us. As much as we banter back and forth, I've got a lot of respect for the maneuver units and what those guys did. And we got all of our airmen and even a Marine contingent fire control team that was assigned to us. We got everybody back from the war that was in our immediate unit. But it was quite a life-changing and career-changing assignment for me. Late fall of 03, my assignment ended there as an ALO. I got back into F-16s, so I requalified an F-16, and was assigned to Shaw Air Force Base, South Carolina, for 3.5 years. That ended in about 07, and at that time, I was at the 12-year point in my active duty career. I had had some buddies that were transitioning into companies like FedEx, UPS, for the most part. I listened to them. I don't know if I want to say unwisely, but I did make the decision at the time to end my military career, and I separated into the Air Force Reserves, still there at Shaw Air Force Base, for about 1 year as I transitioned into the airlines. And then I made the decision to just focus on my family. And so I separated out of military service, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But that is a decision I regret. However, so I moved my family back to where I'd grown up, my friends and family still in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I thought I was just going to be an airline guy. Well, less than a year later, with a new mortgage and a family of five, I got laid off. So I was furloughed. And this was 08 time frame. So tough period nationwide. And I was literally, you know, former Air Force officer, fighter pilot in the unemployment line. And I was even applying for factory jobs, but could not get them.
Wow.
And that's when the Guard literally saved my life.
Wow.
And my family. So at that time, you know, and this was 08, very early 09, I said, well, let me see what the next closest Guard units that flew F-16s were. And that was Montgomery, Alabama was 5 hours to the south, and Toledo, Ohio, 5 hours to the north. So I went and visited both units, and turned out I knew about six guys that I'd flown active duty with in the Montgomery, Alabama unit. And they were spinning up to go to Iraq on a deployment, and just so happened they were looking for a couple of part-timers. And they asked me, you know, would you deploy with us, which was not far away. I had just enough time to do a requal course and go, and, you know, I said absolutely. So I lucky enough to get hired there by the Air National Guard in Alabama. get requalled, and we deployed to Iraq. And it was very interesting to then fly over areas where I had been on the ground and see it from right. from the air side. So I stayed in the Alabama Guard 3.5 years, and a buddy of mine, some people may know, Colonel Con Geasley, he's the current 118th Wing Commander, obviously, but we had been ROTC cadets together and kept in touch, but I was had also, the airlines had recalled us back from furlough at the same time, so I was double commuting at the time, you know, for about 3.5 years doing Alabama Guard as a DSG and temp tech, and then trying to fly a full-time airline schedule, and it was, just being honest, it was tough double commuting. I was home about 3 days a month, and my kids were growing up without me, and so I talked to Colonel Geasley. He was telling me about the new mission change at the 118th to MQ-9s, and I was very interested, and you know, more interested to get closer to home. So, you know, thanks to a lot of folks, and again, thanks to God for timing and opening doors, and when I was able to get hired on at the 118th Wing as an MQ-9 pilot. So that was 2012. They were looking for combat experience, you know, to stand up an MQ-9 weapons shop. I wasn't a weapons school graduate from the Air Force, but I said I've been in ground combat, and I've dropped some weapons from the air side, and I can definitely try my best to help stand up this new mission, the MQ-9, and it just worked out. I was able to work into squadron leadership, and then become the deputy, and then the OG commander at the 118th, and Colonel Glass gave me the opportunity to become the wing commander at the 118th, and on into the chief of staff role here at the state. You know, I say all of that, but I have the lowest ranking airman in every squadron I was in to thank, because they made it happen. But it's just been an incredible team and God's grace that I was able to get the position I am today. But I learned the value of trusting your airmen. I learned the value of trust your enlisted force, because they will save the day, and they've got your back, and if you take care of them, they will take care of you. And that's a cliche, but it's 100% true.
Absolutely.
So sorry for being long-winded there.
No, that's okay. We want to know the story. And I think a lot of that story ties in with what we're talking about.
You know, we're coming to the end of the year, and we take time at the end of the year to reflect and think about things we've accomplished, things we want to accomplish moving forward. But when you think about the people you served with and reflect on that, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. Well, first, we would not have our free country without veterans. The parts of the world that are free would not be free without American veterans. I travel weekly with my full-time airline job on the civilian side now overseas, nearly weekly, and I can tell you that you can see what America has done on a world stage. You can also hear and sense the fear of people from other countries when they think America may be withdrawing from an area, or maybe their presence that had been there is now no longer there. They're scared to death, and they know the freedoms and the strength and the protection that America has provided. We would not have freedom of religion. We would not have freedom to select the jobs we want to serve in. We would not have the American way of life that we've all enjoyed during our lives if it weren't for U.S. veterans.
Excellent. Okay, so we like to end every podcast or every interview on the podcast with the one question, and that is, if you could give one piece of leadership advice to those listening, what would it be?
I listened to, it's actually his story recently, Medal of Honor winner Sammy Lee Davis. He said, you don't lose until you quit trying. He fought by himself. His FOB was overrun in Vietnam, 1968. He was an artilleryman. He was gravely wounded many times, and he kept a really a an NVA battalion, a Viet Cong battalion size element at bay single-handedly. He manned his artillery piece and then small arms throughout the night, carried many to safety. But hearing his humbleness as a humble hero that he is, you know, that stuck with me. And America would not be where we would not have what we have, and to be able to be the beacon of freedom without American grit like that. No matter who you are, race doesn't matter, gender doesn't matter, but that's the American sacrifice that has kept America free and still does. So that has always been on the forefront of my mind to gut it out. I would add that, you know, I knew, and I'm approaching the time in my career when I won't be able to put this uniform on anymore. I would ask all of us to appreciate the privilege that it is every day, you know, every dark, rainy, cold morning that we get up and we put our uniform on, or, you know, our friends are going to a ball game on a sunny day, we put this uniform on. There'll be a day when you aren't able to do that, and you're going to miss it. That day, you know, when I thought I was done with my military service, and, you know, around 07, immediately I had a hollowness, and I missed the brotherhood of men and women that I'd served with, and the camaraderie, and we will all miss that one day. So I would say don't take your military service, don't take that opportunity for granted, because it's an honor.
Sir, thank you so much. General Todd Wiles with us today. We're so thankful for your time.
Thanks very, very much for this opportunity. It's an honor. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely, sir. Thank you.
In this month's Tennessee Bluff, attacks on United States bases in the Middle East have continued throughout the month of November as the Department of Defense repositioned Navy vessels into the area. Between October 17th and early December, U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria were attacked by rockets and drones 74 times, a dramatic increase compared to previous months. The attacks resulted in more than 60 injuries, including several dozen traumatic brain injuries. However, all injured troops were able to return to duty shortly after. The attacks are believed to be linked to the United States' support for Israel in response to Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. In other news, Congress is on the cusp of passing the 2024 National Defense Authorization Act. However, the House and Senate must first reconcile differences in their versions of the legislation. House and Senate leaders are aiming to finalize and file a compromise version of the fiscal 2024 NDAA in early December. Democratic and Republican leaders in both chambers of Congress have made passing the NDAA a top priority. Several key National Guard provisions are on the table for this year's bill, including zero-cost dental care for drilling guardsmen and reservists, a limitation on the termination of fighter squadrons, the establishment of the Space Guard, and parental leave parity with active duty troops. And in Tennessee news, for the first time ever, the 50 caliber Browning machine gun was fired on a Tennessee National Guard weapons range. The first rounds were fired at a ceremony marking the inaugural firing of the weapon at Tullahoma's volunteer training site. For decades, soldiers of the Tennessee National Guard have traveled to training areas in other states to certify and train on the 50 cal. But now this new capability will continue to increase readiness and continue the modernization of Tennessee's volunteer fighting force. That's the Tennessee Bluff for this month. Now back to Master Sergeant Ham.
Okay, we are honored today to be joined by Brigadier General Warner Ross, the Adjutant General of the State of Tennessee. And welcome, sir. So happy to have you again on the 1796 podcast.
Yeah, great to be here. Great to be able to serve in this position and see all the wonderful things that our airmen and soldiers do across the state and across the world, for that matter.
So you took this job. You've been doing the work since January 21st. Of this year, 23. What are your takeaways since you've been in the role as the Adjutant General?
Well, I'm privileged in this role just to get to really from my position to get to see all the wonderful things that are going on with our soldiers and airmen across the world. We've had several missions that we've been on this year, and several more, you know, are on the books to go. But we've been at the southwest border. We have, you know, upwards of 700 troops deployed right now. We've done a dense urban terrain exercise here in Nashville. We continue to do the rescue missions out in the east, and it just reaffirms what I already knew about you know, the work that we do. I just get to see it at a larger scale now and very much up close and personal. So, you know, it's a privilege, it's an honor to get to work alongside these soldiers and airmen and see all the great work that they do. So,
absolutely. All right. So before you were in this role, you were what we call M-Day, or yes, a traditional guardsman.
Yes.
For 32 years, roughly.
Yeah, yeah.
How is being here every day, putting on the uniform every day, how is that different?
Well, I certainly have much more appreciation for what Joint Force Headquarters does or attempts to do every day. Maybe as an M-Day soldier, I didn't get to see how the sausage was made. Maybe as an operational soldier out in the field, there were some things probably that I took for granted that a lot of people are working hard to do every day. But I also have an appreciation, I certainly have an appreciation for that work that goes on behind the scenes, whether it's policy, budget. Some of the things that when you sign up to be a soldier, you don't sign up to get into, policy, budget, those type things, but those are important, and they are what lays the foundation to allow us to help our soldiers get their education with the Strong Act, to keep our fleets maintained, our equipment maintained, our facilities upgraded. All of that administrative work that goes on kind of lays a foundation for the operational units, the tactical units out in the field to do what they do at the level that they do. Now, having said that, again, reiterating just how proud I am of all of our troops, and, you know, we have this motto of ready now, and we certainly are, and that goes to the M-Day soldier. A large 90% of that goes to that M-Day soldier that lays down the plow and picks up the weapon and goes and does the missions that we give them. So I get to see how it all blends together and have a great appreciation for both the M-Day, which is 90% of our force, and also the full-time force that's doing all the behind-the-scenes works to make this a successful Tennessee National Guard.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay, sir, as 2023 comes to a close, a lot of us like to take stock of our lives, take stock of what we've been able to accomplish over the year, the past couple of years, and how to move forward in the future. I like to think of my family, like both my grandfathers served in World War II, so that's really kind of shaped me and how I do things. Could you share a time or a story about what has shaped you to get you to where you are today?
Yeah, most of us have some type of family connection. Those of us that are serving have some type of family connection. A grandfather, a father, an aunt, a brother, somebody that served in the military. I read a book recently called Inheritance, and it talks about how we're moving away from that. There's less of us that are in uniform that have that connection and the impact that that has. But I certainly shared the same type of upbringing that you did, in that I was raised and grew up on a farm that had many families on it, and to a degree, every patriarch of every family on that farm had some type of military service in their background. So it was either Compo One, active duty, Korean. We had Korean War vets, we had Vietnam vets, and plus all the neighbors that surrounded me in that community. So there was an expectation there of service, and so when I completed my studies in college and went back to the farm, I was welcomed by all those families with open arms, but the question was, when are you going to serve? When are you going to do
right,
your part? So that's one story, and that's what influenced me. And I had mechanics, I had wheel vehicle mechanics, infantrymen, all these different MOSs that were there that helped influence me. And I tried my best to uphold what they expected of me. I hope that I have. The other thing that influenced me was at my church, and I'll talk about this coming week at some events that we'll have here. There was a plaque in the back of the church, and well before I could read, I would see this plaque, and I'd be in the back of the church as a little acolyte, light the candles in the church during services. And I'd be back there with ushers who were adult men, and I'd see this plaque, and I'd hear them talk about the names on this plaque. I didn't know what the plaque was, nor did I know what it represented. But as I grew up in elementary school and continued to be in the church and do things that kids are asked to do in church, I was able to read and I could recognize the names, and then I started to put those names together with what my father and grandfather, I'd heard those names before, and I'd heard them in great esteem. These were well-respected people in our community and in our church who were veterans, who had served in combat. And so, to hear my grandfather and father and other people that I looked up to talk about these men and hold them in such high esteem, that certainly influenced me to be like those guys, that must have been a plaque that had special people. And not only did they serve their country in uniform, but these were also people that served our community as law enforcement officers, as teachers, as farmers, as lawyers, as medical people. It ran the plethora of occupations, but the point here is they served in uniform, but they also served their community. And so I've tried, that has influenced me, and I've tried to uphold that through my work in the public schools and just being a guardsman over the years and answering the call to duty.
Excellent. Okay. Most leaders are readers. What have you read recently, or what are you reading right now that you would recommend?
Well, I've read a couple. One I mentioned here is called The Inheritance. Mara Carlin, who's actually an undersecretary, I think, in the undersecretary of defense. And that book talks about exactly what we said at the opening of the podcast, which is that loss of connection between those of us that serve having a military person in our family somewhere. I would encourage all of our folks to read that one. That's a pretty serious book, and it talks about what 20 years of combat, 20 plus years of combat has done. And again, it's called The Inheritance. The next one that I want to talk to you about is not necessarily a theological book or a deep read, but it's called Smokey the Brave. And I was given this book in Knoxville by one of our soldiers. And it's about a little Yorkie dog that became a mascot for a unit over in World War II, I think it is. And the connection there is I have a Yorkie, a 3-pound Yorkie. This soldier also has a Yorkie, and he had seen me with my Yorkie at an event up in East Tennessee. It wasn't planned to have the Yorkie at the event, but we were checking out of a hotel and I had a speaking engagement to go do, and I didn't have anywhere I could leave the dog. And so the dog went to the speaking engagement with me. And he brought that book to me last week to read, and I've just started it. So it's called Smokey the Brave. And it ends up being back in World War II, and it's probably what the therapy dogs are today. That go around to the units, and certainly my Yorkie is a therapy dog for me.
That's
so
awesome.
Smokey the Brave.
Very cool. Yeah. Very cool. Okay, so what message do you have for the troops? I'm just going to give you the mic for a few minutes and talk directly to the troops in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, first I'm blessed and privileged, my wife and I both, to get to do the job that we're doing. I'm humbled by it every day as I see our great soldiers and airmen, male, female, step forward and do incredibly difficult jobs, all for the service of the citizens of Tennessee and for this nation. So I really can't verbally express how humbling that is and how grateful I am just to wear the uniform that our folks wear every day. I'm at the point in my career where I know it's not much longer left for me. And I've really put a lot of thought into how I'm going to handle that. But I'll always be proud of the service that I've done and to stand alongside several heroes. I'm not a hero. I don't see myself in that light, but over 34 years of military service, I've certainly been in the presence of many, many heroes that go unsung and not mentioned. So thank you to everyone out there for what you do. God bless your families. God bless the service that you give to the state of Tennessee and the Tennessee National Guard. And I wish you nothing but more success and the best of luck.
General Warner Ross, thank you for your time today on the 1796 podcast. We so appreciate having you on with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the 1796 podcast. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing, sharing this episode with friends, and giving us a five-star review. The 1796 podcast is produced by the Airmen and Soldiers of the Tennessee National Guard Joint Public Affairs Office. For more information, please visit www.tn.gov/military.